Thank you all for joining us today. We're going to go over the fats, fuels, and oils forecast for the week of February 8th. Today, I have Tori Alden with us, and he's going to go through and focus on the vegetable oil section primarily. If you have any questions, drop them in during the presentation or at the end of the presentation, and we will get to them as soon as we can. With that, Tori, over to you.
Thanks, George, and hello, everybody. So today is going to be a little bit different, only because obviously what I wrote yesterday and last evening was a preview of the report that came out just about an hour ago. And so talking about the preview of the report that came out doesn't really make a lot of sense. At the same time, because this happened so quickly after the report, I haven't really had time to go through the report in detail. So I'm going to kind of hit some high-level stuff, and we'll talk about a couple of other market developments, and then we'll kind of open it up for questions and have more of a discussion than my general talking at you guys for most of the time. So with that, let's dive into our soybean oil forecast. You can see I've changed it a little bit. There's not as sharp a decline in soybean oil prices forecast for basically the U.S. growing season. A lot of that forecast is based on sort of normal weather and normal price movements during that time. I think this year's going to be a little bit different. And I think the WASDE report kind of points out or highlights how and why that's going to be different. If you haven't seen the WASDE report yet, USDA did not make a lot of changes to its soybean complex balance sheets, but the changes it did make were important. On the soybean side, it raised its forecast for soybean 2021 U.S. exports by 20 million bushels to 2.23 billion, sorry. So I guess they actually raised it. I'm sorry, I apologize. Still getting up. I've got a couple of these reports open, so I apologize for this. Hold on just one second. They raised it by 20 million bushels to 2.25. And that reduced the carryout from 140 to 120 million bushels. Obviously, we're not going to have a lot of soybeans at the end of the marketing year. Looking forward to next year, and given where the price ratio between soybeans and corn currently is, February is a really important month because it's the month where the average price determines the revenue guarantee insurance payouts. It suggests that we probably aren't going to get as many soybean acres as we would need to really build stocks quite a bit to build stocks back up to, 400 million bushels or something. And so soybean stocks are probably going to remain tight through the next marketing year. And because of that, I raised my soybean price forecast, and then that translated into higher soybean oil prices or a smaller decline in soybean oil prices during the U.S. growing season anyway. It wouldn't necessarily surprise me if we get into the growing season and there'll be a couple of points along the way where we'll really have a good idea of what the growing season is going to look like just based on normal weather. But it wouldn't surprise me if we get into the growing season and that price forecast continues to kind of creep up a little bit, even with normal growing weather, primarily because, like I said, it's tough to build a forecast that raises the U.S. carryout much above 200 million bushels. And it's really looks more like the U.S. Carryout is going to be below 200 million bushels, which is just at basically pipeline levels, which is basically about as low as you can draw down stocks realistically. And so while we've got this built in based on the seasonal pattern, I think the risk to this forecast is definitely to the upside. On the soybean oil balance sheets, again, USDA did not make any real big changes. They did raise their forecast for biodiesel from 8.2 billion pounds to 8.3 billion pounds. That reduced their ending stocks forecast from 1.81 billion to 1.71 billion. You can see that we are a little below that level, and we expect USDA probably will continue to incrementally move towards our forecast level around 1.5 as the marketing year progresses. They tend to make changes to their balance sheets in increments so that they don't have to raise their forecast for biodiesel usage by 500 million pounds 1 month and then come back and cut it by 250 million pounds the next month. Not that they never raise and then raise something and then lower it the next month. I think in the corn balance sheet, they've probably done exactly that, where they cut it last month and they were forced to raise it this month after the large Chinese purchases. But they tend to try and be relatively conservative in the changes that they make. And so we would expect that the trend in USDA forecast ending stocks, and thus what the market is kind of what is driving prices and what traders are focused on, will tend to become more bullish over time. And that's another reason for the larger upside risk during those summer months than I think maybe our forecast projects, at least at the moment. Outside of that, they didn't really make any other significant changes to their soybean complex balance sheets. And so the other thing that the traders were really focused on that could potentially have some impact on soybean oil prices would be the changes that they made, or in this case didn't make, to South American production. They left Brazilian and Argentine production unchanged at 133 and 48 million tons, respectively. The market was expecting minor cuts in both forecasts. Brazilian weather had gotten better over the growing season. Now they're into harvest. There have been some delays in harvest because of excessively wet weather, but nothing really that significant. Again, that probably has a greater impact on the corn market and the potential for Brazilian corn production, because the bulk of the Brazilian corn crop is planted after the U.S. or after their soybean crop is harvested. And with the late start to the growing season in Brazil this year, the corn crop is going to be planted later. In Argentina, I think that there is still some uncertainty and maybe some growing uncertainty about production. Soybeans are heading into sort of the critical pod filling stage of development. And the forecast has turned dry after some good rains at the end of January that helped kind of perk up crop condition ratings and that kind of thing. If soybeans don't get water during pod filling, it does have a very well-correlated impact on yields. And so while USDA didn't cut their forecast this month, I think that there's the potential that they will need to reduce it a little bit, maybe 1 million tons or 2 million tons, maybe at the most, over the coming months. That's important because Argentina is the world's largest exporter of soybean oil, and so any reduction in Argentine production probably will have a impact on U.S. Soybean oil exports, or they compete with U.S. soybean oil exports. And so that's the one area that I think there still is some uncertainty in terms of USDA's production or predictions versus our predictions. USDA is, sorry, let me get the right thing up here. USDA left their forecast unchanged at 2.75 billion pounds. You can see we're at 2.4 billion. If you look at a couple of different things that have happened over the past month, you could argue sort of both ways. I think that I'm pretty comfortable with 2.4 now, where a month ago I was a little less comfortable and thinking I probably was going to have to raise it at some point. But one thing that's happened is the spreads between palm oil prices and soybean oil prices, or soybean oil prices minus palm oil prices, have really blown out. We've talked for a long time about those prices being at parity and how that drives importing countries to substitute soybean oil for palm oil. Well, in January, palm oil shipments basically fell off a cliff, and so palm oil prices came under pressure, and the spread for, say, the May contract has shot up to about 8 cents, which is well above the historical average. It's not at the upper end of the historical range, but it's certainly probably higher than it should be, and we expect that it probably will narrow a bit over the coming weeks. But that's one thing that probably means less U.S. soybean oil exports in the coming weeks and months. The other is that if you just kind of look at the pace of soybean oil exports over the first 3 months of the marketing year, and we got data for December at the end of last week. If you look at that and you compare that to marketing year totals, it's an imperfect correlation, but it does give you some indication. That, based on that kind of analysis, even our projection of 2.4 billion pounds is above the trend line. We've been above the trend line the last couple of years at this point in the year, but shipments right now are running behind where they were last year. Certainly last year at 2.8 billion pounds, you could argue that 2.75 is below that, and so it kind of makes sense to be running behind. But I think ultimately what is going to happen is USDA is going to have to cut its forecast of soybean oil exports just in order to make room for increases in domestic demand, either in their biodiesel forecast or in their non-biodiesel usage forecast, which includes their forecast for renewable diesel. You can see that we are quite a ways apart on non-biodiesel usage and biodiesel usage. I would suspect that this one, that we may come down a bit on our biodiesel production, and USDA may come up a bit. And I think that they are going to have to come up here on non-biodiesel usage by a fair amount. And we may ultimately trim a little bit, but I think they probably will end up coming up more than we come down due to the growth in use of soybean oil in renewable diesel production. So I haven't really had time to look at canola oil, so we'll kind of just look at the canola oil price forecast. Again, you can see there's a little bit different shape here, and that's primarily because of the changes in the soybean oil forecast. Either way, we think that canola oil prices probably are range bound into the summer before accelerating into the end of the year as the demand for feedstocks really starts to pick up and U.S. vegetable oil stocks start to tighten. I'll have more in next week's report on the changes, any changes that USDA made to their U.S. and Canadian canola balance sheets. The one thing I think that'll be really interesting to see in the report is if USDA has made any changes in their Canadian canola balance sheets based on The data that we've gotten so far, it suggests that they probably need to raise their crush here from 9.94 up to, again, because they'll probably do it incrementally, up to 10.1, somewhere in there might be where they ultimately end up this month. But again, I haven't seen the numbers yet, and so I might be off on that. For the U.S., I don't know that I expect them to make a bunch of big changes. USDA releases their annual U.S. or their annual oil yearbook data set, oil crops yearbook data set at the end of March. And so they will definitely make some changes when they release that. And so this report might be a little bit of a just kind of getting prepared for the changes that they're going to make there and not wanting to make any real significant changes before they release that at the end of March. For palm oil, our palm oil futures forecast is also changed a little bit. It's shaped kind of similar to the soybean oil forecast, with some pressure through beyond the U.S. growing season, really following the seasonal trend in palm oil production. We think that the potential for tightening stocks to continue to support prices remains pretty significant, at least until the seasonal upturn in production, which occurs in February or March, sometime and then. But balancing that has been a big decline in the pace of exports, at least in January, with analysts expecting the MPOB to report tomorrow evening, I guess, that shipments in January dropped 35%. We expect that decline to be a little bit smaller at 30%. But that sort of, over the next couple of months, the battle between the potential drop in production and the pace of Malaysian palm oil exports will be a real big key to determining which direction palm oil prices go. The January may be a one-off. The drop in exports may be a one-off because of some changes that Indonesia made in their tax policy, so that Indonesian palm oil was actually less expensive than Malaysian palm oil. Indonesia reset their tax policy in February, and so now Malaysia is back to sort of the typical relationship. And so I think in terms of the pace of exports, just out of the two countries, or the balance of exports between the two countries, you probably will see that shift back to a more traditional split between them. And I think that probably will keep palm oil stocks relatively tight. That said, if palm oil exports out of Malaysia do not start to grow from the low in January, you could theoretically construct a scenario where palm oil ending stocks end the year around 2 million tons. And so that would be a pretty, I guess, not a huge uptick from where we are, but a big uptick from where we're projecting, but a big uptick from these lows in February, March, and April, where potentially stocks could drop below a million tons. That's what we're expecting to support the market. But if this is sort of shifted higher by a slowdown in exports, then obviously probably this end also grows, and that could weigh on palm oil prices. In that case, soybean oil prices and the spread between palm oil prices could really get out towards the upper end of that historical range, which is about 15 cents. But I think that's a relatively low probability event. I think it's more likely that, like I said, that you see maybe not a huge acceleration in palm oil exports, but palm oil exports at least returning to sort of the normal typical seasonal pace that you would expect, given the seasonal decline in production and in relatively tight palm oil stocks. All right, with that, I will turn it over for questions.
All right, thank you, Tori. The first question that we have, and if anybody has additional questions, drop them in the Q&A section at the bottom of Zoom. What is the outlook for U.S. soybean oil basis?
There had been sort of this split in basis between the Gulf and the interior, where the Gulf had gone up to sort of record levels and the interior was strong for a while and then started to decline. Well, that has reversed now, and basis levels have fallen a bit at the Gulf and they've started to rise in the interior markets. One of the things that has been sort of an interesting aspect to the soybean oil futures market over the past past couple months anyway, has been the fact that futures are in backwardation. And you would expect that given where U.S. soybean oil stocks are, that there would be some carry to the market, just because we've got more than 2 billion pounds of soybean oil stocks floating around, that would typically get you some carry. Part of this may be due to just the structure and the relationship between soybean oil prices and soybean prices, and soybean futures have gone into a huge backwardation because of the relatively low stocks and the really strong demand for exports early in the season. And because of that, you know, the January or the July soybean oil contract needs to have some relationship to the July soybean contract, and so do the March contract and the December and November contracts and on and on. And so some part of that backwardation, I think, is probably built in because of what's going on in the soybean market. However, during the recent weakness in the soybean market, where those spreads came back a little bit, you didn't necessarily see the same thing in soybean oil. Soybean oil spreads have tended to remain pretty well supported. And I've talked to several people about this, trying to figure out exactly why this is happening. The strengthening basis may be an indication of early demand for feedstocks or stronger demand for feedstocks from either biodiesel producers, who are certainly using more soybean oil, at least per gallon, than they have historically, or from renewable diesel producers who are maybe not started up in production, but at least want to build a pipeline of soybean oil coming to the plant so that when they are ready to start production, they don't have to go out and source soybean oil. Then, especially now, given the sort of skew to the upside, that the risk of the risk in the market or for prices. And so I think that probably continues. I think for the reasons that we talked about before, I think exports probably remain weak-ish, or not weak, but not as strong as they were before, and maybe not as strong as USDA is projecting. And so I think Gulf basis probably continues to trend a little bit lower. I don't know that we'll get all the way back to sort of the 2 cent, $2 and or 2.5 cent level that I think is pretty close to the longer term average for the Gulf. And I think that that interior basis levels probably continue to strengthen a little bit more. Interior has come up above a penny in both the east and the west, western corn belts. And I think you could get maybe up to 2 cents, maybe a little bit more than that. But probably it will be difficult to get above that, at least until we get into the U.S. growing season, have a good sense of what the crop looks like, and until we start to draw down soybean oil stocks.
Okay. Tori, outside of USDA data, what are some key data points to watch to get a sense of where veg oil prices might be headed?
There are a lot of them. Obviously, there's a lot of data out there. One of the key data points that I watched that has been leading the market for the past, certainly pretty strongly over the past 6 months, and I think I would argue over the past couple of years, are prices in China. China doesn't import a lot of soybean oil because, or typically they don't import a lot of soybean oil because they import a bunch of soybeans and they crush those soybeans for meal to feed to hogs. But because they slowed down their crushing due to a reduction in their hog herd because of ASF, they've had a shortage of vegetable oils that we've talked a lot about. And so their demand really led the world price rally over the course of this year. And they did buy a lot of soybean oil from Brazil earlier in the year. So the prices on the Chinese futures market, on the Dalian futures market, is one of the key things I think to watch. One caveat I would say to that is that those markets tend to, they're less mature than the U.S. markets. And so speculative excesses and volatility tend to be much higher in the Chinese markets than the U.S. market. So I wouldn't necessarily say sort of watch them tick for tick and expect that to translate into other world vegetable oil prices. But I think that the general trend in Chinese prices is a relatively good indicator of what's going on. Another thing that I would definitely watch, at least in the short term, and talked a little bit about it, is the pace of exports out of Malaysia. One, that'll be a good indication of what palm oil prices are going to do, but also in a lot of ways, that's a good gauge on how strong world vegetable oil demand is. China and India both import a lot of palm oil, and they are two of the, India is the world's largest vegetable oil importer, and while China doesn't import a lot of soybean oil, they do import a fair amount of vegetable oils. And so Malaysian palm oil shipments are kind of an indicator on that. Again, the only tricky part to this is you really have to watch what's going on with the tax situation, not only in Malaysia, but also in India and in Indonesia. And so it's not always as straightforward as the numbers may seem. January is a perfect example of that. But again, the pace of shipments out of Malaysia does give you some general indication of what the world demand for vegetable oil is, whether it's trending stronger or people are stocked up and demand is slowing a little bit. Obviously, I think sort of U.S. crush, the NOPA crush report, is an important thing to watch on a monthly basis, if for no other reason than it gives you a good sense of what USDA is going to say in their fats and oils report that comes out a couple of weeks after, but also in the WASDE report that comes out a couple of weeks after the fats and oils report. It can give you some early insights into whether crushing volumes are increasing or decreasing. Similarly, COPA, the Canadian Oilseed Processors Association, does a really good job of putting out a lot of crush data. Those would be those would be some of the real highlights. There's a lot of little details that you can get down into, but in terms of if I was just going to build a dashboard of like four things that I really wanted to know what was going on, those, I think that would hit the highlights of what I needed to pay attention to understand where the vegetable oil market was going.
All right, Tori, I think that's all we have time for. We'll conclude here. And for everybody, next week is a holiday, but Ryan Standard will be online next Tuesday to go over some updates that he's going to make. So ordinarily, we wouldn't have it next Tuesday given the holiday, but next Tuesday we will be online. So just letting you know that. Thanks again for attending. And Tori, thank you.
Thank you, George. Thanks, everybody.